This is your host, Julio Martinez. And as the gentle tones of Al Jarreau whiffed off into the distance, I'm launching on into the new year. And this is a show that celebrates live theater. And I'm so happy to know that live theater is coming back. And one of the main contributors is the International City Theater. I've been with them before they had a first season, and I'm so happy to talk to Karen Desai, and we're going to talk about a musical that I'm very familiar with. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Julio. Thank you so much for including me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. When I saw the press release that you're going to be doing Stephen Sondheim's Marry Me a Little, I had to laugh. Because back in 1984, I was involved in a cabaret version of that show, and
as a performer,
I was part of the orchestra. Actually, the orchestra was guitar and keyboard. The guitar represented the man, and the keyboard represented the woman.
Interesting. Well, yeah. It's wonderful music, that's for sure.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
And it worked its way well to be doing a cabaret because it was an adaptation of a number of Stephen Sondheim songs, and we had to cut it down a bit because we had to shorten the show. But let's talk about your show.
That's okay. Well, I think we've all done a bit of, even when I was an undergrad student, I mean, I performed in a Sondheim where we took his different music and put a show together. So that was at the university, and it was not, you know, professional, and it wasn't, you know. But Marry Me a Little is the same idea of taking music from other shows and making a new one. And you know, now because of his recent passing, which I had no idea when I chose this for the season, it's certainly a tribute to him and his contribution to musical theater, that's for sure.
And as many people in the audience must know by now, Sondheim died on November 26th at age 91. And he was indeed a titan of the American musical theater.
Yes, yes. I love his music because it's so clever and thoughtful.
Yeah.
And we're cast, and we're supposed to start rehearsal January 18th, although I'm still waiting for my contract from the union, but we're moving ahead.
And
odd, strange times we're living in, yes.
Yes, and you have two ladies at the helm of this show.
Yes. Yes, we have Carrie Hayter as the director. It's not her first time to directing, but it's her first time working with International City Theater, and she's certainly an accomplished director. And then Diane King-Van, who is an extraordinary musician, and she's the musical director and accompanist. And I worked with Diane 12 years ago, 15, on a show that she put together, Pollution Solution, which was when we had our traveling children's theater before the recession, and we toured that to the schools and parks and reached 40,000 children.
Wow. Now, is Diane the full orchestra?
Yes.
So this is a very compact show.
It is, and I purposely chose a smaller show to start the season because I wasn't sure where we would be with the virus, and of course Omicron hadn't been on the scene when I selected it, but then usually the holiday surge and all of that, so I wanted to keep it small and, you know, safety first. And, you know, we were lucky enough to open in 2021 because, you know, we work on a calendar year, so we did do two live shows, and the first three shows I did virtually last year, so I did produce the full season. But I'm hoping to do all five shows live this year.
Well, this show opens February 11th at your home at the Long Beach Performing Arts Center, and it's running through February 27th. And
yes, 3-week run.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I remember when you first moved into that theater.
Oh, you probably remember us before that, Julio. You knew us when we were on the campus.
Right. I used to chase the rabbits around, yes.
Yes, you did.
You said you haven't started rehearsals yet?
No, next week is pre-pro week for the stage manager, and then the following week we start with, and Katie Tang and Nick Tubbs are our performers.
Now, Katie Tang has been with South Coast Repertory. I know she did She Loves Me and Sweeney
yes.
Todd there. So
yes.
She must have a good voice.
yes, and a wonderful resume, and so does Nick. Nick worked with us before on Forever Platt.
Yes, I remember that. And I've been following Forever Platt around since it first began. So it sounds like it's going to be a lovely evening of theater.
Well, we certainly hope so. I mean, that's, you know, do it right or don't do it at all.
Now, this is your debut show of your 37th season. The whole five seasons been worked? I mean, the whole season been worked out?
Yes, I'm happy to share it with you if you have.
Oh, I have lots of time. Go ahead.
Well, after Marry Me a Little, we have A Doll's House Part 2 by Lucas Neff. And I don't know if you're familiar with that play. You might be familiar with the original A Doll's House by Ibsen, which was written in the late 1800s. But you don't need to know the first, you know, Ibsen's play to understand Lucas Neff's version. And this is, and the show has 8 Tony Award nominations. So this is like, you know, in Ibsen's play, the woman, Nora, walks out the door and leaves her family to discover who she is. In Lucas's play, she comes back and knocks on the door. When Ibsen wrote this play, his play, it was revolutionary, and it was banned. Unheard of for a woman to do that, to assert herself like that. And that's what I love about Ibsen. I mean, when you think about a writer in the late 1800s writing about a woman's perspective on life, you know, with Hedda Gabler and, you know.
Yes.
I just love his work. Anyway, and this is a very interesting take on her coming back. So there's humor, and it's a very interesting play. And then after that, that's going to run in April.
Right.
Then in June, we're going to open The Legend of Georgia McBride by Matthew Lopez, who's quite a hot writer right now. And this is about a young man who's an Elvis impersonator, and then he finds out, you know, his wife is expecting, and the landlord wants his rent, and the seedy bar where he works, the manager's firing him because he wants to open a drag show. So Casey, this young man Casey, is about to embark on a new adventure. He's got to support a family. And Georgia McBride, we had really booked it in 2021. And it's not a play that I think is great for virtual production. I wanted to make sure I did it live because it ends with a drag show. It's really fun.
Do you use a band in this?
Yes. So I bumped this to 2022. There's another show this season, 2022, that was bumped from 2020, to tell you the truth. But after Georgia McBride, we have Fugard's play Valley Song.
Oh.
And I'll tell you, the Wall Street Journal said, this extraordinary play is what theater should be. And it's his first play after apartheid. And it's about a young girl who seeks the courage to embrace the future, while her grandfather searches for the wisdom to let go of the past. So it's a generational story, coming-of-age story, and hope-filled as well. But it's generations trying to come together with a man who's, you know, lived under apartheid and a young girl who wants to branch out and look at her future beyond the soil and servitude, you know? So...
Who's directing this?
Right now, I I'm planning to direct it.
I was wondering if you were. It sounds like your kind of show.
Oh, boy, do you know me. I directed another Food Guard play, Master Harold and the Boys, back in 2002. So, yeah, quite a writer.
Stay tuned to Arts and Review. This is Julio Martinez. You are listening to KPFK 90.7 FM. If you're in Santa Barbara, you're listening to us over 98.7 FM. And if you're standing alone on the streets of New York, you're listening to us stream live around the world over kpfk.org. And keep supporting KPFK. And I thank you. And now back to my conversation with Karen Desai. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Julio.
So, how difficult was it for you to launch back up into public performance?
It's been challenging. I mean, everybody, it's been challenging for everyone just to deal with this, but new things and trying to keep up with protocols and safety, and we had to have COVID safety officers and testing, and like now, you know, I'm sure that's going to be required again. It's just trying to find tests. And that was when that came in, when we opened in August 2021, and that was all of that was required, which none of that had been budgeted for. Who expected that, right? Mm-hmm. So when we went live, all of those things were required. So it's just been quite a journey, and trying to get some realistic expectations from what we can and can't do. And then, you know, there's a discrepancy between what the large theaters, the Lort theaters, can do and what the smaller theaters can do. And the smaller theaters are held to stronger, stricter protocols, which seems crazy. but they, you know, have, you know, a bargaining agreement with the union. So
what is this, the seating capacity of the theater?
Well, the theater itself, you know, is much larger than our contract, you know. So
right.
Our contract's a couple hundred seats, and it seats about 800. So we don't obviously use all those seats. I'd be happy to be selling what we could sell, you know. But the nice thing is that if we want to do some social distance seating, we can, and that's how we started in August. We were skipping rows and seats, and we hadn't asked for proof of vaccination, but we are now. And we did in our October-November show require proof of vaccination. And it's just we have to ensure everybody's safety, especially with this one that seems to, you know, spread so quickly or easily.
Right.
More easily. You know, and, you know, it's really unfortunate because 2019, the year, you know, we were looking forward to our 2020 and our 35th anniversary had been a really stellar year for us. Subscriptions were up over the last 6 years. Two shows beat 34 years of sales records.
Wow.
In the same season. So 2020 was looking really good. And we opened our show, our season, with Andrews Brothers, and fortunately that show closed March 8th before the world shut down on March 13th.
Wow.
So, you know, it was jumping into the virtual world, and, you know, and I directed Daisy in 2020, and it was just jumping in because I refused to just not do anything to serve our community or our mission. You know, so in 2021 I was committed to doing our complete season. So, although we could only do the first three shows virtually, and the last two live, we did produce all five shows.
Wow!
And of course, subscriptions are down from our pre-pandemic levels. So, you know, as far as I look at it, we're in a rebuilding phase, and it's just going to have to work with we have to work with our reality and make sure that everybody stays safe and feels safe and knows that we're going to do our best to keep everyone safe.
Well, I remember you and Shasheen as being such great educators, so committed to education. You had mentioned that you're still involved in that. Do you do community theater projects or educational projects?
We do, yes. Well, we have 6 education programs. In fact, we did some of them virtually. We did a conservatory. We didn't do the singing, dancing, acting, playwriting. That's normally the focus of all those 4 things in our conservatory, but we just focused on acting and playwriting because we were doing it virtually. And then the students to stage, we were able to give tickets to some classes to watch the virtual productions. And then the 3rd grade program, which is our biggest program and it's been around now for 20 years, we managed to revamp that into a virtual platform because it's a sequential learning program over 3 weeks. And we continued that because these 3rd graders learn about theater and they write a play and they perform it over the 3 weeks.
Wow, that's great.
And we're back in the classroom now doing that program. And normally we would reach like 480 classrooms a year. I'm not sure how many we'll get to this year, but we'll try. And then we have the internship program where we train young people in either administration or production. And, because we're a union theater, I'm able to give them points towards their union cards. And we've, over the years, I think, given at least 20 kids their union card and hired them back as professionals. So I believe in investing in the next generation. And honestly, Julio, I look at it not just an investment in our youth, but it's an investment in our nation. If we're not teaching creative thinking, then we might not have artists, but we won't have scientists and researchers and inventors and entrepreneurs, et cetera. You know, so I think it's really important. How else are we going to compete in the world? And then we have a special program for low-income seniors that's been going now. I think I created it like 15, 17 years ago to reach that population. Let's face it, I didn't want to shoot myself in the foot because we do have a lot of seniors that grew up going to the theater, so, you know, you don't want to lose that base of support. But then the low-income seniors that are living in these residences and their 4 walls, we provide the tickets and the transportation for them to go to the theater. So, and they are so grateful, and we did resume that when we did live productions. And I have to tell you that when things shut down, this was really touching for us. One of our low-income seniors walked to our office to give us a $100 donation.
Huh.
And it was so touching, you know. And even some of our volunteer ushers. I mean, when we do a campaign and like an intern from the past will send a donation, I mean, the people that believe in the work you're doing, and it's not the amount, it's just that they understand and value what we do, and that's deeply appreciated.
Now,
it's the most human art form as far as I'm concerned. It's people to people. And when we can bring people together who come from different backgrounds and different points of view, and we can have them see a different person's story, and it creates empathy and understanding, and we celebrate. We celebrate through, you know, having that greater perspective into the human condition, you know, and celebrating those triumphs over those struggles. I don't know. I think theater's really important for for educating and for building community.
Now, if people wanted to know more about International City Theater, could they go to your website?
Absolutely. It's International City Theater. That's THEATRE. International City Theater.
.org.
Yep. Yeah, I usually say ictlongbeach.org, but I know that on the brochure it says internationalcitytheater.org, or you could go to ictlongbeach.org. That shorter too.
Which is also the way you can get information and to purchase tickets for Marry Me a Little. Or you can call 562-436-4610. That's the show we were talking about at the top of the show, which it begins the 37th season. And it runs Thursday, Fridays, and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., February 11th through February 27th. There will be two preview performances taking place on the 9th and the 10th, both at 8 p.m. And opening night tickets are a bit more because there's going to be a post-show reception. So that is how
you're hired. Thank you.
And as stated before, there needs to be proof of vaccination for admission. Masks covering both mouth and nose must be worn throughout the performance. And that is just a sign of these times.
It is. I think we're all getting, I hope we're getting used to the masks and understanding how we protect each other that way for the greater good.
Yes, and I look forward to coming out to see the show. I'm really hoping I could see Mary a little because I loved the show when I was doing it, and I'd love to see how it's done on stage. I want to state, by the way, that Donna Walker's Performing Arts Showcase comes to you, and it's that good that Donna came here. She went through a horrendous trip home and back again, but she is here in studio. Her guests are filmmaker Andy Ostroy and his film Adrian, about his late wife Adrian Shelley, the creator of Waitress. And I want to thank you for having a date with me for a half an hour, Karen. This has been great.
Oh, I love spending time with you, Julio. We have a long history, and I appreciate a fellow artist spending time with me.
Yes.
Thank you.
And I hope to see you soon. This
yes,
is...
Marry Me a Little.
Thank you.
I-C-T. Thank you.
But this is your host, Julio Martinez. I'm at Arts and Review. I've been here since 1987. I'm an old-timer. Donna Walker follows me. We are the Arts and Culture Hour every Friday on KPFK 90.7 FM, Pacifica Radio for Southern California. And stay tuned. Donna Walker is upcoming, and I will be back next Friday at 2 p.m. Thank you, and thank you for keep supporting KPFK's Arts and Review. Bye-bye.
Hi, everyone. I know you've heard our fundraisers and likely thought, yeah, I should likely give something back to KPFK. Well, now's the time to do it. We all understand the value of separating luxuries from necessities and deciding what's truly essential. KPFK is one of those essentials. We provide in-depth, cutting-edge, intelligent coverage, and it starts with our amazing staff and volunteer programmers and with your financial support. Contributions from our listeners add up to the largest share of funding that pays the bills here at KPFK. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth, encouraging you to become a KPFK Sustainers Circle member now. A sustaining contribution of just $20 or more a month is one of the most popular levels for our donors, and it takes just minutes to contribute. Just go to kpfk.org/support, then click Sustainer Circle, or call 818-985-2711. Thank you so much for your donation to KPFK, radio powered by the people. ¶¶
And welcome to Pacifica Performance Showcase, Arts and Culture to Enlighten, Enliven, and Educate. I'm your host, Donna Walker, and it is my great pleasure to welcome via phone filmmaker Andy Ostroy, whose very powerful and very personal documentary about his late wife, Adrienne Shelley, is going to be debuting on HBO. It is powerful, it's personal, it's emotional, and it's quite beautiful. So welcome, Andy. I'm happy to have you with me.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
This, I just have to admit, is I anticipated would be a little bit difficult for me. I don't know about you, but it is a very, very personal film. It's a very beautiful and touching memoir. I just kind of don't even know where to start, except that for people who don't know the story of Adrienne, I do. I remember hearing when the story broke, and I was haunted by it ever since. I have seen the film of Waitress, which is fabulous, and I had also seen the musical when it played here at the Pantages in Los Angeles. Talk about Adrienne and the story, and what prompted you to say, I need to tell Adrienne's story?
Well, Adrienne was in my life for 5 years. She was like no other person I had ever met. She was truly a unique individual, and that comes through in some of the interviews in the film where her friends talk about her in that way. And so she not just captured my heart, but she had profoundly changed my life at a point in my life where I was ready to experience that. And then she was gone. She was gone at a point in her life as a person where she was really the happiest. And she was also gone at a point in her career where she was just on the cusp of achieving everything she worked hard for and dreamed of achieving. 15 years ago, when she died, because of that, as a person and as an artist, I have felt compulsion to continue helping build her and expand